Rose, and welcome to another episode of Critical Success. I'm James D'Amato, your Game Master. I am ridiculously behind on listener questions. Part of that is because I switched emails midway through the original Critical Success series without really telling anybody about it. If you're looking to get a Critical Success question answered, be sure to email it to gamemaster@oneshotpodcast.com. And make sure Critical Success is in the title. Also, Kat's going to be getting in on this party soon, so if you want to address the question specifically to her, or to both me and her, you can put that in the title of your question. Because I have so many questions to answer, and because Kat was sick this week, which created a lot more work for me, I decided to do this week as a rapid-fire round. I'm going to answer as many questions as possible, as quickly as possible, with as little editing as possible. Let's see how that works out for me. The first one was actually posted to our Google Plus community by Chuck. And he writes, I appreciated the Critical Success episode about character voices. I'm really looking forward to applying your advice the next time I play. I was also looking over the primary emotions material in Making Comics by Scott McCloud. And I was wondering whether you had any advice on how to portray character emotions, especially the more complicated situations where characters aren't always being forthright with their feelings. My attempts at doing this as a game master and a player don't come off correctly. I get the feedback that my characters feel flat, that it's not clear how my characters feel, and I think this hurts the immersive feel of my game. Any advice? Ambivalence can be a tricky thing to portray for anyone. Most actors struggle with doing this sort of thing. The thing they tell us about performance emotions at Second City is to always go big. If you're going too big, you can always back off your energy, but it's hard to get your energy higher once you've already started something. And since your feedback from the groups that you play with is that your characters feel flat, I don't think it's a risk to go over broad. You're probably just naturally a much more subtle performer. If your instinct is telling you that you're going too big, I think you're just about right. Now, for straight up playing a conflicted character, someone going through two emotions at once, there's a really good cheat for that. You can give a really broad performance through your voice, and then undermine that by describing details. For instance, I have total confidence in the virtual core security system. It's completely impregnable, and I demand that you apologize for your accusation. The security officer's face turns a bright red as sweat runs down the side of his face. His eyes dart between the different members of your party as he tugs at his collar. There's nothing about that character based on his voice that would suggest that he's lying or nervous about the situation that he's in. But by filling in the details afterwards, I change the context of what he said and how he said it. Acting skills like this are something that you just need to spend time with and work on. Practice makes perfect. Next up, I have an email from Sean, who writes, I'm currently running a Pathfinder campaign for three of my friends, and two of my coworkers have expressed interest in playing. I was wanting to start a new campaign with all five of them, with a more sandbox feel. One of my players has expressed interest in GMing, but she doesn't feel comfortable enough running a whole campaign alone, and asked if I would be willing to co-GM. Do you have any advice about how this could be done? Do you even think this is possible? The old co-GMing question. I think co-GMing is one of the few things in gaming that gets criticized more than splitting the party. And for the record, I think both are totally acceptable things to do. That is, if you know what you're doing. The first thing you need to do is decide what co-GMing actually means to you. And to figure out what will work best for you and your situation, that means talking to your friend about what makes her nervous about GMing. Is it plotting the game, preparing encounters, controlling the party, acting out NPCs? I don't need to tell you that there's a lot that goes into GMing. Talk to her about it and find out what makes her nervous. It could be something as simple as not feeling comfortable with all the rules, and you can be in a support position in many different capacities that way. I've done co-GMing pretty much throughout my gaming career. Some of you might know from interviews that I've done that my second role-playing system was Shadowrun. And Shadowrun was a huge gaming system at my school. We all sort of discovered it together. Somebody brought it up during one of our club meetings, and before you knew it, half of the club wanted to play a game. After I played one session with a pre-made character out of the book, I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be a thing for me. It became clear very quickly that one GM and one game simply wasn't going to cut it for our demand. So about five of us got together and learned the system like the back of our hand, and decided to put together a weird rotary GM system, because we all wanted to play and run the game. Every Friday, we'd have about four games a night. Some I was running, and some I was playing in. We also had a large group of dedicated players who would be playing in two games in a night. To make the experience meaningful for them, we had to build a shared Shadowrun universe. We needed to keep track of things like major NPCs, what was changing in the major corporations, and if there were any really public and noticeable jobs that happened. These sessions went on for about 2 years without any signs of slowing down. And that's because of the open communication between GMs. One thing you'll realize when you enter a co-GMing situation is that secrets are not important and that metagaming is silly. We all told each other what we had planned for the meta plot and what we wanted for our characters. That allowed us to support each other in building each other's stories. Even as characters, we were able to lend help because we could push the party in the right direction to allow people to get out the points they wanted to get out. When you're co-GMing with your friend, don't be afraid to tell her what's going on in the game. It'll actually give her a peek into how plotting a game works, which is a skill that she's going to need to learn if she wants to get behind the Dungeon Master's screen. This doesn't mean you need to go tile by tile and explain the format of your dungeon. If, when she's not GMing, she's still going to be playing, you don't need to let her in on everything. Basically, the meta plot is open. Character arcs are open. And what you have planned for each individual session is open. But the details of that, you can feel free to obscure. The other thing you need to think about is how to share authority when you're at the table. I think a lot of people get freaked out about co-GMing because they're worried about where their players are going to look when the game is happening. Generally speaking, I think a game is a little bit more coherent if it's one person pulling the story along, while the other GM is providing support. You have one GM describing environments and reacting to party actions, while the other person is there to fill in as NPCs to provide a little bit of extra voice flavor, or to control specific monsters during combat so you don't have one person who's splitting their focus between too many foes. It can be really great if you've got two people who are collaborating during the building stage. Not only do ideas flow more freely when you have another person to bounce them off of, but during the session itself, your co-GM can fill in details that you might have lost in your notes. As long as you guys can comfortably share focus and can politely interrupt one another to share new details, you can co-GM pretty easily. Now, if you're a doubter and you need evidence that co-GMing works, you need look no farther than Campaign. Campaign is 90% Kat and 10% me. Essentially, Kat has been straightforward with me about certain things she wants to do with the plot and each episode and the individual characters. In episode 3, our most recent episode at the time of this recording, you can see that collaboration in action. The fever dreams that I described for Bacta and Tamlin have foreshadowing to events that are supposed to happen later on in the game. I was able to make those moves because although I have my player hat on at the table, I've also got a tiny little GM hat on too. Because Kat let me know what she wants, I was able to become a better collaborator for her. So yes, co-GMing is totally possible. And you can make some great games with it. You just need to have a frank discussion about what your expectations are for a co-GMing role, and how you want to implement it together. After that, it's just practicing good give and take at the table. And finally, Robert wrote us asking what would be a good system that we would recommend for a group that wants to play politics, intrigue, and conspiracy games. Well, Rob, I've been on my Epicurean gaming odyssey for a while, and I still have a long way to go. But I think I have a few suggestions that might work for you. Although intrigue is kind of a specific genre, there are actually a bunch of different ways that you can do it. Starting with games that have been on the show, Fiasco is actually a great choice for intrigue. It's a system that helps build strong motivations for characters. Politics, and by extension intrigue, flow very naturally out of situations where you have characters who are going after social goals as hard as they can. Most of the Fiasco games that I've played in have ended up pretty lighthearted and madcap, but it doesn't have to go that way. If you set expectations at the beginning of play and everybody decides that they want to have a serious game, you can easily make Fiasco a serious system. Staying in the lighthearted category, we can also turn to Paranoia. Paranoia is a game that's set up almost specifically for intrigue. Paranoia is set in a dystopic Soviet-style state where the party has orders shouted at them by a friend computer. The missions are often mundane, and the excitement comes from the mistrust that you have of the GM and the rest of your group. Everyone has their own goals and rules that they play by, and it ends up pretty madcap, a similar feel to an Everyone is John. If you want to take things more seriously, you can't go wrong with Knight's Black Agent. This is a spy game made by Kenneth Haidt, and it's the game that we're actually currently featuring on One Shot. Technically, it's made for vampire hunting, but you could easily adapt the system where players are unraveling a top-level conspiracy or acting as strong arms for a shady political faction. The trust and stability rules work really well for conspiracy tropes. Since I'm already discussing Pelgrane, I absolutely have to mention Drama System. Drama System is made by Robin Laws, who's my other go-to designer. Drama System has really great rules for playing games with a dramatic premise. If you want to do scenarios where character work and digging deep into backstabby politics is your thing, Drama System does a great job of organizing that while fostering creative player choices. Finally, I just wouldn't be James D'Amato if I didn't talk about Dread. Now, I love Dread, and I know that I talk about it all the time, but I seriously think it's one of the most underutilized systems out there. You could make a great Dread scenario where players are all co-conspirators in a scandal that's about to break. They all realize they'll have to bury each other to come away clean. Each time the tower falls, the player who made it fall is publicly caught up in the scandal, until one person walks away clean. Now, I know my listeners will have other suggestions, and I recommend you post those in the comments below the episode so everybody will be able to see them. And with that, I think we have quite enough to think about for this week. Critical Success will be back in 2 weeks with more food for gaming thought. If you have a question you'd like to be answered on air, email it in to gamemaster@oneshotpodcast.com. Be sure to include Critical Success in the title. If you've got more urgent questions for me or other one-shot heroes, you can post them to our Google Plus page. And while you're waiting for a new Critical Success, be sure to listen to our other podcasts, One Shot and Campaign. Soon, all of these shows will be found at oneshotpodcast.com. Critical Success is a joint production between Tenpenny Press and Peaches and Hot Sauce. Peaches and Hot Sauce is a Chicago-based comedy network with tons of great articles, videos, and podcasts for you to enjoy at peachesandhotsauce.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Be Your Own Pet with Adventure, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes!